Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC, brought to you by The Athletic. It's midweek and, oh, thank goodness, we're not going to be talking about a Watford match and having to reflect on what's happened. Relax. My name's John. With me is Mike.
Hello to you, John.
Hello. Listen to you. The Athletic's Watford correspondent, Adam Leventhal. Good evening, Adam.
Oh, very good evening. Hello.
And we're here to talk about something you've been working on for a while, Adam. And the piece came out this week. You've had an interview with someone who I sort of was trying to think, was he a myth or was he a mystery man? No, because we could see him. He was definitely the visible face of the club hierarchy for me, and the man who was getting all the blame for all the club's shortfalls in this last season, Filippo Giraldi. It's a great interview, came out today that we're recording this, and it seems to have really hit, found an audience, and everyone is loving it.
Yeah, I'm glad. It was an interview that I'd wanted to do for quite some time, even an interview that I would have liked to have done when he was still at Watford, but he left his role as technical director. He'd previously been the chief scout at the club. He left his role as technical director in November. And then there was a little bit of a hiatus when people were going, well, has he gone? Is he still there? Is he going to work still for the Pozzo family? And then it became clear that, yes, he had left. Turns out that, right, well, we can now speak about your experiences at the club. And I think, you know, as you mentioned there, people have found it very interesting. I think this interview could have fallen at a different time after a victory or in the middle of three wins on the bounce or whatever. But I suppose it's quite timely, I suppose. And that's, you know, that's sometimes you can't really plan it. It just happens. So we caught up last week. Yeah, we sat down and we spoke for 2 hours via Zoom. Obviously, we weren't sat next to each other. He was speaking from his home in Florence. We just spoke about his time in the Pozzo set up at Watford, and the interesting thing, and we'll obviously, you know, dig into what he said and everything, but it was great to get his take on things because he has been there right from the start. People might not have been aware of him at the beginning because you'll remember it was even Giampaolo Pozzo, the father of Gino, that was initially there when it was the Pozzo family coming in. And then you still had Scott Duxbury, of course, the chief executive only at the time, now obviously the chairman as well. And you had Gianluca Nanni, who was the technical director, but Giraldi was the chief scout. So he wasn't one of the prominent figures, but he was actually one of the people that came initially to do reconnaissance work on Watford before the club had actually been bought by the Pozzo family. So he is someone that has seen the journey all the way through, the good, the bad and the ugly. So it was great to get his take on the journey, but obviously with quite a lot of focus on the last 18 months or so.
Mike, what did you know? What did you, as a fan, I've seen him at a couple of fans forums. He was always a great talker. You know, what did you think of him before this article?
To be perfectly frank, it was difficult to get a real handle on what his day-to-day life and responsibilities were. I think the obvious thing, if you think of Filippo Giraldi, you think about him being down there at the touchline at full time, don't you? If you sat in the Sir Elton John stand, you'd be conscious of him being in and around at the back there, often quite vocal as well. But he'd pop up, wouldn't he, down there at the touchline, and you'd think he really is hands-on, isn't he? On a he's across that sort of invisible divide only a very few people get to go across on a match day, which is basically to the touchline. So I have to be honest, and I was aware of his role as technical director. But, you know, hand on heart, could I have explained to, say, Arlo or someone who didn't know anything about football or Watford exactly what his role was? And I think probably not. So I was really interested to, salivating when Adam tipped us the wink that he was going to be having the opportunity to talk to him, wondered about how open he'd be. And when I read the article, we're talking on Tuesday, when I read it this morning, first thing, it was great because it was a valuable insight into what his day-to-day was like and such a valuable insight into what it's like working with Gino and Scott, what the Watford machine actually looks like. And I think it's a real glimpse behind the curtain and the first one we've had, certainly of this nature, for some time. And Adam mentioned it being timely, and I do think that it really is. We've talked at length about how everyone feels frustrated and upset and worried. Well, I think what this does is, because you do get that glimpse behind the curtain, it humanises the whole thing, the whole aspect. It's easy to say Pozzo family. It's easy to say the regime. It's easy to say the project. It's easy to say Giraldi cocked it up with the transfers. It's easy to do all that stuff. And hearing from Filippo Giraldi, it shows that these people going into work to do their very best for a club that they're obviously invested in financially and emotionally, it's a really difficult industry and sort of stuff. A lot of the stuff that Filippo Giraldi talks about, the moving parts, there's loads of them, basically. And it's a juggling act, it's a tightrope, whichever cliche you want to use. It's true. And I just loved hearing from him because it put some meat on the bones of what life is like working inside Watford. And that sort of, there's an easy assumption to assume it's like, right, get us up, keep us in the Premier League, let's aim for Europe. And there's so much going on, and just hearing about the challenges and the difficulties was fascinating, illuminating, and really timely. That human element, that human aspect, humanising the people involved, couldn't have come at a better time.
The article you can read on theathletic.com, and you can subscribe if you're not already at theathletic.com/rookeryend. But let's hear a little bit of the interview that Adam did with Filippo. In this bit, we're going to hear about his role at Watford, his relationships with coaches, with making decisions and signing players or not, and how he worked with the club's hierarchy, the chairman Scott Duxbury and the owner Gino Pozzo. And of course, how he reacted to the backlash he seemed to be getting last season.
I've always been involved with, stay with coaches, support the coach, see and speak with them more before than after. After you do an analysis. But if you want to really be a support, you have to discuss way of playing style before. Then my respect for every coach we've got has been total. And I don't want to say that you can speak with them and ask them if I've ever interfere. I've done my job, that is to confront them, to speak with them, to let them understand that we would like every player to have been given an opportunity. But when the right time is, no, it's like, if he's an asset for the club, let's try to see if he's the right asset or if we have made a mistake, that is possible. So I consider myself good at my job, not if I don't do mistake, but if I do as less mistake as possible. And to do that, I need not to be lazy, to watch a game more, even when I'm tired, to keep going, to keep watching, because I will always do mistakes. Maybe I sign a good player who is not working in our team. I think the big difference between a scout and a director is sometimes there is a good player who doesn't feel a team. So it's the understanding of the chemistry between players. And this is something I always try to respect. Now, you cannot sign two central defenders with the same characteristic. I know one of the criticism has been on the defense. I think that the organization is very important. We have always tried with our possibility because it's not like we got petrodollars owner. So we've always to respect the club and the safety of the club. So most of the time I would have loved as well to sign without limit, but that's not our job. So, and I've enjoyed that, and I was completely sharing the situation. Then, of course, sometimes you want to, can we go and sign a player more? If we can, we can. If not, not. It's how football is, and no problem. Scott has been fantastic. It's been unusual. I don't think I will ever gain a relation between, I mean, myself, Gino and Scott has been, we were thinking about the club 24 hours. And then I think last year has changed a lot of things because people were much more nervous because of the situation. And that has changed also our relation, unfortunately. But my point of view is really an incredible way of working together to respect the other. And I was giving my opinion to Scott in things more close to his part of the job, and he was giving his opinion to me without that being influential, but very important in the way that he will listen to another voice, not because we were talking overnight, early in the morning, was a full immersion. No, it's not like, okay, I do my job, now I go home and I switch off. No, we will, honestly, I've never switched off, and I've, that's the way I work. So if there is something we can correct, sometimes we have made mistakes, that's part of the job, but we have never made a mistake because we haven't cared or we haven't think about. Maybe sometimes we have think too much about the thing. Sometimes we have disagreed between us. Sometimes my view has prevailed. Other times Scott's view, or most of the time Gino's view has prevailed. But that has been through a real confrontation, not because there is a owner or a CEO or a technical that they have to be responsible. We confront the idea and we go after out of the room with one idea, and it's been very good. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to go back to something you said about being at the training ground, but it's a different way of doing things. You know, you being at the training ground, there being analysis of training and things like that. And that was something that Kike sort of seemed to suggest was a bit like, it's almost like giving a bit of a claustrophobia, like too much attention, too much pressure.
There is different approach, okay? It's always down to men. The honesty you have as a man to approach with another man. If you are honest in your judgment, and honesty means that you have to report to an owner if there is something that is not correct at all, but you cannot solve on your own. I think I can solve most of the problem between myself and the coach. So I'm not someone who likes to report. I mean, there's problems. Sometimes there's something I don't like, and I discuss with the owner, with Scott, I discuss with the coach first. That's the way it should work. I don't report the things that someone else wants me to report. I don't like to report things. I watch a training session to have my own opinion, not to report what is happening. I've never done that. I understand what you mean with the situation of the head of performance, that Kike was a bit annoyed because it looks like they are analyzing my job. No, that's the feeling there. It's not really that, but it's difficult to let them understand that it's not that, because the analysis of the game was we were taking care of prevention as a club. To take care of prevention is means we can put a player available or not, depending on loading, on his own situation. Head of performance is more interested in that. And part of that is also watching training to see how player behaving in training, to see if that will lead or not to an injury. But they don't trust that. They want to trust what they like sometimes, coaches. No? So they think, no, that's the excuse for them. No, it's not an excuse. Then there has been a couple of situations where they were right. There was going a bit too much in terms of questioning why you do that instead of doing that. But that's normal. First of all, I think Kike is a very good coach. But I think there was a reason we didn't confirm him in the first season. We decided not to exercise the option for a further year with him. There was a reason for that. That was a story that, for me, should have finished there. I've taken part in every decision, okay? So I'm not hiding any of my responsibility. I've always done. I think we should have gained more time to Javi. And I didn't tell that to you. I say that as well. When was the time to do it? I think that has been a mistake to dismiss him at that time. Maybe after other games, if we didn't see a change, it should have been something we could have considered. And my personal view, that is not a club view, is what Filippo thinks, and is that we should have gave him more time. For the last 8 months, I was the scapegoat of everything. The defeat at Man City was bad recruitment. Okay, the same recruitment who led to a 3-0 win against the unbeaten Liverpool. So I'm not considering myself a genius because we immediately ought to have done everything right, as I don't consider that I have done mistake. There are other parts. The responsibility has been mine. So the mistake has to be referred to myself, and I take the responsibility for that. It's not that I'm hiding for responsibility of sign or not sign a player. The owner and the club in general has been brilliant with their possibility, but has been brilliant every time. Then, on some other decision on coaches, probably I should have fought stronger for my opinion, but we had to accept also that the person who is taking the biggest responsibility in terms of financial is not myself. And we have always to take care that the most important thing is the safety of the club. We cannot put our hat in the air and waiting for things to happen. We must act in a way that the club will be strong no matter what happens. I don't like, and I never like to work through slogan. We will be go back there, we will do the this on that. No, it's the job of every day who will define us. So that's what we have to do. Work harder than the other because we have less resource. Is try to reduce the margin of error. And that is valid for myself and for every people who were working with me. Then to discover, or for you to have an opinion, it doesn't matter of myself talking about me personally. You need to speak with people at the club and think what they think about. It's not, I accept everything they will say because I worked with all of them 8 years and a half. I know how I have worked. So I'm completely in peace with myself. It didn't end well. The relegation is still something that annoyed me incredibly, but it cannot cancel what has been a fantastic journey about 5 years in the Premier League, competing with every team and beating the biggest club in the world and doing that quite regularly.
It's the era of social media, and it's much more easy for someone to go there and say how bad you are, this in, this out. It's a shame, it's a shameful, whatever Watford have done, blah, 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 they haven't done nothing. People forget quickly, but on the other side, I have to say that every time that I've met some Watford fans on the street, it has been magnificent. They've always been thankful, they've always been supportive, and I've learned how people care about this club, how much they love their club, no matter what.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
From the Rookwind, we've been a massive supporter of prostate cancer for a few years. You might remember our walk we did from St Albans to Watford to Barnet to Wembley Stadium to help support Mike's dad, who was suffering from prostate cancer a few years ago. He's all right now. It's all going very well. And the Athletic are doing their bit to help support such an important cause such as prostate cancer. They're actually going to put on 31 football quizzes across February and March. And the aim is to find out which subscriber is the most knowledgeable. And of course, hopefully raise some money for this very important cause. Prostate Cancer UK help fund life-saving research and provide valuable support and information for men and their partners affected or worried about prostate cancer. We'll be encouraging you to donate money on the night for such a great cause. There'll be a quiz for every single team the Athletic covers, and the Watford quiz, hosted by Adam Leventhal, will be on Monday, March the 8th. The winner of that quiz and all the quizzes will go through to the grand final at the end of March, where there'll be a very nice £1,000 up for grabs. And of course, The Athletic will match this with a donation to prostate cancer. If you're not already a subscriber, you can sign up by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And if you are, or at least once you are, then you can register to play the quiz by searching for prostate cancer on The Athletic website.
Part of The Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Just hearing Filippo speak there, it's wonderful to, I said it, how the piece humanises him, but hearing from him that does so as well. I think it's important to point out, perhaps at this stage, that obviously language at the moment is very important. Everything's very emotive and highly charged at the moment, isn't it? And I think perhaps it's worth saying at the top that direct quotes can be dangerous, can't they, when listening to or writing down what Filippo said, because something can get lost in translation, and perhaps it's important that we remind people not to be 100% literal with absolutely everything that's said. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, but I think, you know, he's got a good grasp of English, as we've just heard. You know, absolutely. That'll be the first time that a lot of people maybe have heard from him. I know he did an interview quite a while back for the club. He did on video. There's been a print one as well that he did, but he's not really been heard of. And he said, I don't think I put it in the piece, but he said, you know, I prefer not to talk. I prefer to work. And that is just his way. You know, he's very much a person. He uses the phrase, you know, it's full immersion in terms of his job and the way that he works. He's a workaholic. This is someone that was going to a game, watching it back. He actually said, and I didn't put it in the piece, that he would almost sometimes torture himself if things hadn't gone well. And he did that, which I couldn't believe, because it would be the last thing that I would want to watch. I remember being there with my mum and a couple of mates watching the game against Leeds when it all just went wrong. You know, he was saying that that was one of the most confusing games he's ever witnessed. And he actually went back to his house and put the game on and started to watch it and thought, right, come on, we have to move on because we've got the playoff semi-finals now to focus on. And also he joked he couldn't quite believe that that there was an end of season dinner crammed in the middle as well, because it wasn't the normal thing done for Italian clubs. They might have sort of, you know, reunions for the players at the end of the season, but to get the fans and the players together, it was actually quite a unique thing. So, you know, I learned a little bit about his journey, but also about how much the job actually meant to him. And, you know, from his point of view, I think he was able to speak, going back to your original point, with confidence about how he felt and the experiences that he'd had and the interactions that he was able to have, not only with the ownership group in Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury, which he spoke very honestly about, and, you know, as we heard there, you know, taking his fair share of the blame for things, but also, you know, when you are ruling a football club by committee to a certain degree, because we know that, you know, the buck stops with Gino Pozzo, and he mentions it there that ultimately if you're putting all the money in, then you will have the final say on things. It reminded me a little bit of when Brian Clough would say that, you know, we'll talk about it and then we'll realise that I'm right.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. I loved it. I loved the fact that he explained the way that they would discuss it. And I think he said sometimes we'd come away and it'd be sometimes my decision, sometimes yeah. Scott's decision, and then a little, almost like a comedic sort of theatrical pause. Yeah. And he said, usually Gino's decision.
Yes,
it's perfect. Yeah. What a great sort of little insight into the reality of working there. And what the other thing that was just hearing you talk and recount that there, Adam, there as well, was just the commitment, the desire, the professionalism that's required to do a job like that. Because you know I'm certainly speaking for myself as a football supporter, very emotional when you get very sometimes very high, sometimes very low, and emotions can be all over the shop with football. And you talk about that Leeds game. I've never watched that back. I've never watched the Man City game, the cup final back, and probably never will. But that's the difference between these guys having to go in and sort of make the tough decisions. And he spoke quite a lot about that, didn't he? About having the tougher side of the job. You know, late night, early morning conversations with Gino or Scott, which I'm sure must have been difficult. Managing those relationships with the head coaches, which I think that's something that people were really picked up on, didn't it? The potential for his sort of interference, for want of a better word, with head coaches.
And I didn't think that's there's two things that I got from the interview, and that was one of them, Mike. The thing about him watching on the training ground, and he does talk about the fact it was for prevention and for making sure training was right. But you know, fans have sort of been critical of that, because I think fans sort of sit there and they go, well, I don't want to be watched doing my job. Mm-hmm. No one does that. I have to. I'm a teacher, and once a term the head teacher comes in and she watches me do a lesson. That's part of what I do. But actually, there aren't many jobs where you have to have that sort of situation, and it must be off-putting. And when you know things are going wrong, and he said he didn't normally report, and he would always speak up front to the coaches, he would speak to them first, and I get that, but he's a very, very honest person, but there were definitely things where you think his role and being the in-between man between the coach and Gino would just cause problems, or at least they wouldn't be able to solve problems.
Well, I think what I found the most interesting was the context that he was able to put around those interactions, from the recruitment of the head coach to the employment of the head coach to the point where there might be fears that head coach isn't the right person. You know, what he would say on a constant basis is, I was there to support the head coach. So the bond initially was, right, how do you want to play? What system do you like? You know, we might need to integrate some of these players because we have, you know, this experienced player that we want to push forward. We might want to, you know, sell him, or he's a really important, you know, player in the squad. You know, that's not revolutionary stuff. That's the sort of normal interaction that maybe you might have directly with a chairman or at other football clubs. These are interactions that happen all the time. I think probably the reason that the atmosphere, and you know, in the clip there you included the question that I'd asked him about that sort of claustrophobic feeling, that obviously gets raised more and more the more frequent the head coaches come and go, I suppose. And people will say, you know, outside, well, this atmosphere isn't conducive to a happy relationship. But he is able to explain a little bit more that the head coaches know that they're not coming here to play a part in recruitment. We've known that for a long time. So that's not sort of completely different to anything that we are familiar with. But then you do still sort of bump into head coaches along the way that might not have read the small print a little bit.
I was going to say, there must be always something in it. I know they're not going to go in there, Sam Allardyce, and say, I want to find, you know, buy 50,000 players. No, I'm joking. But, you know, that sort of feeling of, you know, well, there's this player I'd like to bring in. Is that okay? And I think we've seen that. And we saw that early in the Premier League, you know, under Kike and under Walter. They definitely brought in a few of their players. Every manager must know, okay, I get it. I'm not going to sign every player and prove them all, but I'll have a say, won't I? And or at least assume they would.
I think there is a consultation that goes through. And that's happened even recently. It was very clear that Vladimir Ivic had had some part to play in some of the signings, in sort of assessing the squad. And let's not forget, that was a really, really difficult period that the club was going through, because they didn't really know what players they were going to end up with, who still wanted to play for the club and all that sort of stuff. But there was, you know, obviously some talks going on about, I would quite like a left back or a left wing back or just a left footer, if anyone, just someone with a left foot would do, please. And obviously it never arrived under his reign. Just gives a little window into the fact that, yes, there are discussions. And that is more with Filippo Giraldi's successor, Cristiano Giretta, obviously, now. But in terms of, you know, the other things that the head coach knows when he comes into the club, yes, he's not going to have a part in recruitment, but also he will be introduced to all the supplementary staff or support staff around that is often in existence when they come in. You don't come in with, you know, bringing your full team of coaches at Watford necessarily. Sometimes it happens, but not always. So I remember, like, Nigel Pearson, for example, almost thinking, you know, right, I've been out of the game for a while. I've come back in, worked in Belgium. I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to embrace this sort of new approach. So it's not something that is automatically a negative thing.
Yeah, this is what I meant, Ad, by the quotes, because one of the things that has been pulled out by quite a lot of people is the phrase, we're not a club that leaves the coach alone and lets him get on with the job. Now, I think you could, if you're a Pozzo skeptic, if you like, and say, ha, look at that, they've got their nose in it every minute of every day. You can't get on there. When the reality is, I think what he is actually inferring there is that when you're a manager of a head coach at Watford, we are there to assist and we are there to help. And there is a whole team and there is a whole sort of, you know, there is a hierarchy. There is stuff that you're responsible for and won't be responsible, but you will know the people who are, and you will have discussions with the people that are responsible for this. And we're not just going to let you leave you at the training ground 6 days a week and then march into your office after the game and say, what the heck happened there? I think that's the, and you know, there are different layers, aren't there, to it. He did sort of discuss his, what he does at the training ground, and he was sort of not defensive, but he was very, he said, look, I can't, it's my job to know what's going on in training, because then I can't really in good faith talk to the manager if I haven't seen what's going on. So you could argue that, do you want an absentee member of the hierarchy, if you like, barking orders at you if he's not sort of seeing what's going on all the time? So I could definitely, you know, they could definitely feel the pinch, couldn't you, if things aren't going well, when you look out the corner of your eye and there's Filippo Giraldi and you know that Gino Pozzo's in the training complex somewhere as well with a gold ballpoint pen and on his mobile phone, making furiously jotting it. You definitely could see why that would be potentially intimidating, maybe, or slightly concerning. But also, you know, you want the people that you are responsible to be aware of what you're doing, I guess.
I think you're absolutely right. I suppose the thing that so many people have said is that, well, it's clearly not working now because, you know, Watford are going through head coaches time and time and time again. But the point whereby he explains when they start to have some worries is actually quite interesting. And I'll come on to Kike in a moment's time, because he actually raised it in an article that I wrote. Obviously, I went over to Madrid and we did that podcast where I was sort of taking you through the journey, me sitting in a cafe and all that sort of stuff. So I'll come on to Kike in a moment. But when he basically says, look, we start to worry a little bit when we see a head coach maybe working on something throughout the week, and then, you know, there is no real evidence that the work that he is doing on the training pitch is being put into play in matches. And you sort of go, well, yeah, that makes sense. And I know a lot of people have sort of put the two things together that have emerged over the last few days. You know, the fact that Chisco Munoz was practicing on the Thursday with a 3-5-2 and then it was a 4-4-2 on Saturday. But in the piece that I did previous to this one, I did also highlight, well, you know, it's not necessarily clear whether that is preparing for the future or if it was for another reason, if there wasn't a player that was available or whatever. But you can see that it makes sense for the likes of the technical director or for the owner or for the chairman and the chief executive to see a clear path between, right, this is what's happening, and okay, we can see the sort of the correlation between training pitch and matches. And Filippo says in the piece, we can come through defeats fine if we know that everything is, yeah, on track. So, you know, it's not like whenever there's a defeat, they, you know, they lose their proverbial. They can understand defeats.
Yeah.
I suppose it's just at the moment, there is that problem that they are, and this is something that I think is a very important part of the interview, that he was able to delve into the reason why the squad looks the way that it does because of what happened in the summer. And we've been talking about it for quite some time, you know, on recent podcasts, and basically saying, you know, they couldn't shift some of the players that they had wanted to shift or intended to shift. And it meant that they had to go, okay, let's switch to plan B then, and we'll have to, you know, sell these players to La Liga sides, the likes of Estupiñán or Suarez, or, you know, not being able to bring Hernandez back into the mix. Obviously, relegation had a key point in that. The finances had a key part to play in that. And the pandemic, obviously, you know, taking a big hit on the money coming into the club. So he was able to explain it. And I think, you know, one other big part of this interview is simply that. He was able to explain the view of what has been going on at a decision-making level. You know, you pulled out on the last podcast, I think it was, the quote that's being used a lot on social media about...
We will do all we can.
Well, two things on that. From what Filippo was saying in this piece, I think you can understand the emotion and the investment that these people have. So those words aren't empty words. They are actually what they are intending to do.
All these fans who keep reposting it, they're getting confused with them saying, "This is we'll do everything we can, not everything that we want to do, or not everything that is possible in the realms of, well, not reality, basically." I think there's definitely that feeling that the way he talks about how they worked, their commitment to their work, that they were, and they still are, doing everything they can. But also, he does admit, of course, not every decision they make is a right decision. But again, that's real life.
I like the reality of life running a football club becomes clear listening and reading Filippo Giraldi's words. He mentions Gino Pozzo has invested a lot of money and therefore he has the ultimate decision. So that, I think, is important for everyone to take a moment and realise. There's real people investing real money into our football club and therefore he wants to protect it and do best for that. So that's important, you know, for me to be critical about Watford is fine, but I also have to remember I'm not the one with millions and millions of pounds invested in it. So that, I think that's helpful just to have us reminded of that from time to time. I do think it was fascinating talking about the transfer window, and he used the phrase the market, I think, has stopped. So that tells you how difficult the trading is out there. And so if you combine that with relegation as well, so that's, you know, Watford overnight were less attractive for players coming in, more attractive for players trying to get out. And then if you combine all that, and he also mentioned security and the future of Watford, he mentions that a lot. And I think that's something that we need to remember and be aware of and be conscious of. You know, he mentions Purvis Estupiñán and Luis Suarez, a left back and a striker, potentially in the building, ready to go. And what are the two areas where we as supporters have been quite critical of not having grade A players, left back and a striker? Well, unfortunately, they had to be moved on because we were relegated and we didn't. The money needs to come in to fill that gap because you don't get as much TV money, believe it or not, in the Championship as you do in the Premier League, despite parachute money. So money had to come in to plug that gap. They would have preferred to sell other players who weren't able to get rid of. So that's the reality. So and I think what becomes clear and is that there is a plan. Of course, there is a succession plan. And, you know, we did talk about it. If we had stayed up last year, the Watford squad would have looked pretty tidy. And the plan could have all come to fruition. But there is a plan when it comes to head coaches. And if things aren't aligning, they've been in football between them. You know, the experience they've all had in football is long enough to recognise when things are going south pretty rapidly when it comes to a head coach. We'd all like them not to fire as many. We'd all like a bit of more longevity. But the reality is they know that they've probably have It's not a tick box, but they have a list of things. And if that's going wrong, that's going wrong, and that's going wrong, then the likelihood is that the head coach isn't going to turn things around. And that's why they act. And in terms of the transfer policy, they do have a plan. They do, you know, that for us as supporters to suggest that they can't recognise that we've got a striker issue is a bit daft, really. And for them to suggest that they've no idea that we need a left-sided defender is daft. And the fact that he mentions that, not daft, but is a bit short-sighted for us as supporters. It's the Pozzo industry, it's football. They don't get to own football clubs and make them successful by luck. And I just think hearing it laid out and reading it laid out is a little reminder. It's like, ah, yeah, these lads know what they're doing. They're working really hard in difficult, challenging circumstances. And as he alludes to, plenty of mistakes along the way. They hold their hands up to it. But I do get the sense of chaps, of experienced blokes trying really hard for the club that we love. And I think it's that little insight into the reality of a day in the office for these guys. It's tough.
I really like the fact that he is now, or I can definitely view him as this man who isn't 100% to blame. He played his role, all the rest of it. Because I remember being at the Brighton away game last year where we, you know, of course we drew with an own goal from Adrian Mariappa, and the bloke behind me just shouting, "This is all down to Giraldi. It's all Giraldi's fault." It's like, how on earth do you know that, mate? How do you know that? Just why is he the bad guy? And I know he put himself, you know, doing the high fives and stuff as the players come off the pitch. Right there, he made himself visible and open for that. But it's just good, Adam, I suppose, in some ways, that he still looks back on his time. He still uses the word "we" when he's talking about Watford. And also, you know, he does see the Watford fans and the ones that he interacted with as being very thankful to him for everything that he did do during his time, if it did end in the end with that relegation.
I don't think that, you know, he absolves himself from the blame. He said it on a number of occasions. You know, he obviously mentioned the fact that he felt that he was a little bit of a scapegoat. And also, I was very, very keen to speak to him about some of the things that had been written by me about him. Let's not forget there was the article that I wrote where it appeared, and we asked the question, is Filippo Giraldi sort of influencing in-game activity in that game against Manchester City? So I was able to talk to him about that, and he was very well aware of it. And he was able to explain exactly what was going on, explained that there was some issues over the GPS and things like that. And he was sitting there with the head of performance, and they were going up and down like hamsters in a cage playing on their toys. It was quite entertaining to watch, and it was just very, very eye-catching. So, you know, I wrote an article about it, and he was able to explain it in this article that is obviously on The Athletic now. The point that he was visible is that he had a confidence in what he was doing. He didn't really fear the backlash. He didn't think that there was going to be a backlash because he'd been doing it all the time. I suppose the fact that he was the sort of the public face, or the most visible face of the operation, maybe tells you that he was quite comfortable in his own shoes, that he was comfortable in the role that he was playing. Yes, it didn't go well at the end. And he, as I said, you know, he takes his portion of the blame for it. And he talks about transfers. He talks about Craig Dawson. He talks about some of the other players in the group. He's very strong on Andre Gray and his situation at the moment. He also speaks very, very, very warmly about Will Hughes and how important he is to the future of the football club, and the fact that he was in and around the dressing room. This is like a little thing that you learn. You know, he says, I used to go into the dressing room. I didn't talk, but I would watch and see how things were going. And when Watford were relegated, Will Hughes was one of the players that he could see was really wearing the frustration and the pain of getting relegated. And he always thinks that he is, you know, a captain on the training pitch and you know, future captain on the pitch as well. So that was sort of quite heartening to hear. But it also makes you think, well, we have to make sure that we get it right with Will Hughes for the remainder of this season, because we want to keep hold of him, because he knows what it means and he is someone to build a team around. So there was lots of different elements to the piece and to the interview. But one thing I think is really important to point out from all of this and from everything that he says is the fact that he was able to say it, and he was able to speak freely. And I think that that's what people will get from this piece. Obviously, a lot of people will still think, yeah, oh God, if he'd done something differently, we might still be in the Premier League. Of course, he knows that. He understands that. But I think it was really important to be able to talk about it, because there's nothing wrong with failing. That's the thing that I think that obviously gets lost sometimes in the polarizing world of social media. And, you know, he mentions about people being thrown under the bus and things like that. It's all right to fail. We all fail. We make mistakes all the time. These guys failed. But if you talk about it, you discuss it, it sort of kills the story a little bit and it makes it more understandable. And you get people on your side. We're all in this together. You know, we're all Watford. They are the owners of the football club. But it's important sometimes to remind the fans that, yes, we are all in this together. And although he is now outside of the football club, it was just a nice reminder that they do have, you know, the best interests on the whole of the football club at their heart. And it would be nice, you know, to maybe have a little bit more free discussion and communication from the very top. It popped up on my social media earlier on. I hadn't really thought about it, but I think Gino Pozzo's only really done one interview, and that was back just after he'd bought the club, maybe in 2013 or something like that.
Yeah, with Frank and the Watford Observer, yeah.
It's overdue. It's not a matter of, you know, wanting to hear from him day in, day out, and, yeah, you know, have a daily Gino bulletin. It's just a little bit more of a running commentary. You see it at other clubs. I know that Scott Duxbury, you know, pops up now and again. I don't think the sort of the Hive Live Q&A thing went particularly well. And I think the, you know, the live audience does sort of help those sort of things. So maybe that they might be reticent to do many more of those at the moment, because you it's nice to have that live element, and you know, Filippo made his part in some of those events that they'd done before in pubs and things like that, and at the club. But yeah, hopefully, you know, this has maybe opened it up a little bit for fans, and they can learn a little bit more, and people outside of the club can learn a little bit more, and maybe it might even sort of set off a few thoughts within the club to sort of think, well, yeah, maybe we should maybe be a little bit more open, and I know it's a difficult time at the moment. Maybe this isn't the time to be doing it. I understand that, but it's I think I can't remember who the company was, but it is good to talk. It's good to talk, and I think it would be great if we had a little bit more talking from the top.
You mentioned that it might not be the right time. Well, I actually woke up this morning, Adam, and read the piece and felt better about the club. You know, we've been critical and frustrated and upset and worried over the past couple of weeks, and that doesn't get washed away just because we've heard from someone, and it doesn't wash away the frustrations of relegation. It doesn't wash away the what ifs of the mistakes that were made. But what it does do is, like I said, you know, it makes you realise and makes you stop and pause for thought that, you know, it's a difficult job being done by people that are just humans like us. And just that, having that vague increased understanding of what goes on, and a sort of vague belief that there is a system and a process and protocols, and just that look behind the curtain just does give you reason to A, stop and think, and B, think, well, yeah, actually, it's people doing their best for something that we care about. And that does come down to, I think, having that little bit of understanding. We'll never be privy to all the conversations. We'd never ever expect to be, nor should we be. But just hearing that, a few little kernels here and there, just a few little anecdotes, a few little bits of information about what goes on and why, and, you know, immediately I felt like a cloud had been lifted. You know, that it doesn't change the way the team have been playing. It doesn't change the concerns we've had about this season so far, and that we will continue to have if things don't improve on the pitch. But it's like, oh, okay, I get it a bit more now. Hugely, hugely valuable. So I think it's come at a great time. Fascinating above it. I think it's interesting for any other, for you don't need to be a Watford supporter to be interested by it, because I think Watford have, you know, they are a bit of a curate's egg in the footballing world, aren't they? There's people sort of raised eyebrows whenever you hear them mentioned, or a roll of the eyeballs, whatever. So I think people getting that glimpse inside it will be fascinating for anyone with a passing interest in football. And I don't think it's done Watford reputationally any harm whatsoever. So, yeah, hopefully there can be a little bit more of it.
Adam, if I had a Steve Wright in the Afternoon sound effect where it's made it sound like there were 50 people in this room with me, giving you a round of applause for an interview, I would play that right now, but I don't. But a little one for me. Yeah, so it was.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And as you know, the mics there, I absolutely back up. It did give you a different feeling towards the bad times we're having at the moment. We're not going to talk about the weekend just because let's just have a couple of days off. But who's next on the radar, Adam? It's Rick Holden, isn't it? That's who you want to interview next, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
What a great name. Well, no, I haven't forgotten about Glyn Hodges either. So, yeah, it's Rick Holden, Glyn Hodges,
yep.
And Jason Drysdale.
Oh, yeah.
the big hitters.
Huge with the Watford fans of about the, well, about 15. The article we've been talking about in this podcast, you can go and read the whole thing, the full analysis Adam's done on The Athletic. Just go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And at the moment, you get it for $3.99 a month, which is about 13p a day. So you can go and read the full thing there right now. We'll be back with another podcast after the Bristol City game on Saturday. What time is the kickoff on Saturday? I never know these days. Is it normal time? 3 o'clock?
Yeah, let's just hope Watford kick off at the same time that the whistle's blown. That's all I can hope for.
And we'll be back with another podcast after that. Thank you very much, Michael.
Not a problem. Thank you, Adam. And thank you to Filippo Giraldi as well for giving you time. But yeah, well done, Ad. That was brilliant. Thank you for bringing it to us.
And thank you, of course, Adam.
Absolute pleasure. Gents, I hope everyone enjoys reading it. And yeah, fingers crossed, we're on for a better run.
Fingers crossed.
The Athletic.